star of your own show, not part of the supporting cast. For The Basement, you have to make $20 million a film and get a slice of the gross. I still want to know what Comic-Con is, Kerensky said. Later, Kerensky, Hester said. Jesus. He turned to Abnett. So, what? We get Kerensky to pose as Mark Corey and get into the club? What does that do? Abnett shook his head. He doesn't pose as Corey. You have him go into the club and do to him what Andy here did to me. Draw him out and get him interested and maybe he will help you. I wouldn't tell him you want to kill the show, since that means he'd be out of a regular job, but otherwise maybe you can get him to introduce you to Charles Paulson. He's the show's creator and executive producer. He's the one you have to talk to. He's the one you have to convince. So, you can get us into this club, Dahl said. I can't, Abnett said. Like I said, I don't rate. But, I have a friend who's a bartender there, and I got him a commercial gig last summer, kept him from going into foreclosure, so he owes me big. He can get you in. He looked at them all, and then pointed at Kerensky. Well, get him in. He pointed at Duvall next. And maybe her, too. You keep your friend from losing his house, and he lets two people into a club, and these are equal favors, Hester said. Welcome to Hollywood, Abnett said. We'll take it, Dahl said, and thank you, Brian. Happy to help, Brian said. I mean, I've sort of become attached to you, seeing that you're actually real and all. I'm glad to hear that, Dahl said. Can I ask you a question? Abnett said. Sure, Dahl said. The future, Abnett said. Is it really like it is on the show? The future really is like it is on the show, Dahl said. But I don't know if it's really the future. But this is your past, Abnett said. We're part of your past. The year 2012, I mean. 2012 is in our past, but not this 2012, Dahl said. There's no Chronicles of the Intrepid television show in our past. It doesn't exist in our timeline. So that means I might not exist in your timeline, Abnett said. Maybe not, Dahl said. So you're the only part of me there, Abnett said. The only part of me that's ever existed there. I guess that's possible, Dahl said. Just like you're the only part of me that's ever existed here. Doesn't that mess with you? Abnett asked. Knowing that you exist and don't exist and are real and aren't all at the same time? Yes, and I have training dealing with deep existential questions, Dahl said. The way I'm dealing with it right now is this. I don't care whether I really exist or don't, whether I'm real or fictional. What I want right now is to be the person who decides my own fate. That's something I can work on. It's what I'm working on now. I think you might be smarter than me, Abnett said. That's okay, Dahl said. I think you're better looking than me. Abnett smiled. I'll take that, he said. And speaking of which, it's time to take you folks clothes shopping. Those uniforms work in the future, but here and now, they get you branded as geeks who don't get out of the basement enough. Do you have money? We have $93,000, Hansen said, minus $78 for lunch. I think we can work with that, Abnett said. Chapter 17. I hate these clothes, Kerensky said. You look good, Dahl said, assuring him. No, I don't, Kerensky said. I look like I dressed in the dark. How did people wear this? Stop whining, Duvall said. It's not like you don't wear civvies back where we come from. This underwear is itchy, Kerensky said, tugging. If I knew you were this whiny, I never would have slept with you, Duvall said. If I knew you were going to drug me, kidnap me, and take me back to the Dark Ages without my pants, I never would have slept with you, Kerensky shot back. Guys, Dahl said, and motioned with his eyes to the cabbie, who was studiously ignoring the weirdos in his back seat. Not so much with the Dark Ages talk. The cab, on Sunset, took a left onto Vine. So, we're sure Mark Corey's still there, right? Kerensky asked. Brian said his friend called as soon as he got there, and would call if he left, Dahl said. Brian hasn't called me since then, so we can assume he's still in there. I don't think this is going to work, Kerensky said. It'll work, Dahl said. I know. That was with your guy, Kerensky said. This guy could be different. Please, Duvall said. If he's anything like you, he'll be totally infatuated with you. It'll be like looking into a mirror he can poke. What's that supposed to mean, Kerensky said. It means that you being fascinated with yourself isn't going to be a problem, Duvall said. You don't actually like me, do you, Kerensky said after a second. Duval smiled and patted his cheek. I like you just fine, Anatoly, she said. I really do. But right now, I need you to focus. Think of this as another away mission. I always get hurt on away missions, Kerensky said. Maybe, Duval said, but you always survive. The Vine Club, the cabbie said, pulling up to the sidewalk. The three of them got out of the cab, Dahl pausing to pay the cabbie. From inside the club, music thumped. A line of young, pretty, studiously posed people waited outside. Come on, Dahl said, and walked up to the bouncer. Duval and Kerensky followed. Line starts over there, the bouncer said, motioning to the pretty posed people. Yes, but I was told to talk to you, Dahl said, and held out his hand with the $100 bill folded in it, like Abnett told him to do. Mitch, right? Mitch the bouncer glanced down almost imperceptibly at Dahl's hand, then shook it, deftly scraping the bill out of it as he did so. Right, Mitch said. Talk to me then. I'm supposed to tell you that these two are Roberto's friends, Dahl said, mentioning the name of Abnett's bartender friend and nodding back to Kerensky and Duval. He's expecting them. Mitch looked over at Kerensky and Duval. If he noted Kerensky's resemblance to Mark Corey, he kept it to himself. He turned his gaze back to Dahl. First floor only, he said. If they try for the second floor, they're out on their ass. If they go for the basement, they're out on their ass minus teeth. First floor, Dahl repeated, nodding. And not you, Mitch said. No offense. None taken, Dahl said. Mitch motioned to Kerensky and Duval and unlatched the rope. Audible protests came from the line of pretty posed people. You got this? Dahl asked Duval as she walked by. Trust me, I got this, she said. Stick by your phone. I will, Dahl said. The two of them disappeared into the dark of the Vine Club. Mitch latched the rope behind them. Hey, Dahl said to him, where can a normal human go to get a drink? Mitch smiled at this and pointed. Irish pub right up there, he said. The bartender's name is Nick. Tell him I sent you. Thanks, Dahl said, and headed up the street. The pub was noisy and crowded. Dahl worked his way to the bar and then fished in his pocket for money. Hey, Brian, right? Someone said to him. Dahl looked up to see the bartender staring back at him, smiling. Finn, Dahl said. Nick, the bartender said. Sorry, Dahl said after a second brain freeze. Occupational hazard, Nick said. You get known by your part. Yeah, Dahl said. Hey, are you all right? Nick asked. You seem a little... He wiggled his hands. Dazed. I'm fine, Dahl said, and made the effort to smile. Sorry. Just a little strange to see you here. It's the life of an actor, Nick said. Out of work and bartending. What are you having? Pick a beer for me, Dahl said. Brave man, Nick said. I trust you, Dahl said. Famous last words, Nick said, and then headed off to the taps. Dahl watched him working the taps and tried very hard not to freak out. Here you go, Nick said a minute later, handing over a pint glass. Local microbrew. It's called a Starlet Stout. Dahl tried it. It's not bad, he said. I'll tell the brewmaster you said so, Nick said. You might remember him. The three of us were in a scene together. He got killed by a swarm of robots. Lieutenant Fisher, Dahl said. That's the one, Nick said, and nodded at Dahl's glass. Real name is Jake Klein. His microbrewery's taken off, though. He's mostly doing that now. I'm thinking of joining him. And stop being an actor? Dahl said. Nick shrugged. It's not like they're tearing down the doors to get at me, he said. I've been out here 9 years now, and that gig on Intrepid was the best thing I've gotten so far, and it wasn't all that great. I got killed by an exploding head. I remember, Dahl said. That was what did it for me, actually, Nick said. He started washing glasses in the bar sink to give the appearance of being busy as he talked. We did 10 takes of that scene. Every time we did it, I had to toss myself backward like there was an actual explosion. And around take 7, I thought to myself, I'm 30 years old, and what I'm doing with my life is pretending to die on a TV show that I wouldn't watch if I wasn't on it. At a certain point, you have to ask yourself why you do it. I mean... Why do you do it? Me? Dahl asked. Yeah, Nick said. I do it because for a long time I didn't know I had a choice, Dahl said. That's just it, though, Nick said. You do. You still on the show? For now, Dahl said. But they're going to kill you off, too, Nick said. In a couple of episodes, Dahl said, unless I can avoid it. Don't avoid it, Nick said. Die, and then figure out the rest of your life. Dahl smiled. It's not as simple as that for some of us, he said, and took a drink. Mortgage, huh? Nick said. Something like that, Dahl said. C'est la vie, Nick said. So, what brings you down to Hollywood and Vine? I think you told me you were in Toluca Lake. I had some friends who wanted to go to the Vine Club, Dahl said. They didn't let you in? Nick asked. Dahl shrugged. You should have let me know. My friend's the bouncer there. Mitch, Dahl said. That's him, Nick said. He's the one who told me to come down here, Dahl said. Ouch, Nick said. Sorry. I'm not, Dahl said. It's really good to see you again. Nick grinned and then went to tend to other customers. Dahl's phone vibrated. He fished it out of his pocket and answered it. Where are you? Duval asked. I'm at a pub down the street, Dahl said, having a very weird time. Why? You need to come back down here. We just got kicked out of the club, Duval said. You and Kerensky? Dahl asked. How did that happen? Not just me and Kerensky, Duval said. Mark Corey, too. He attacked Kerensky. What? Dahl said. We walked up to Corey in a booth. He saw Kerensky and said, So you're the fucker whose picture is on Gawker, and lunged at him, Duval said. What the hell is a Gawker? Dahl asked. Don't ask me. It's not my century, Duval said. We all got thrown out, and now Corey's passed out on the sidewalk. He was already drunk off his ass when we got there. Scrape him off the sidewalk and fish through his pockets for his valet ticket, Dahl said. Get all of you in his car and then wait for me. I'll be there in just a couple of minutes. Try not to get yourselves arrested. I promise nothing, Duval said and hung up. Problem? Nick asked. He had come back up while Dahl was on the phone. My friends got into a fight at the Vine Club and got kicked out, Dahl said. I need to go get them before the police arrive. You're having an interesting night, Nick said. You have no idea, Dahl said. What do I owe you for the beer? Nick waved him off. On the house, he said. You're one good thing for the evening. Thank you, Dahl said, and then paused, looking at his phone, and then looking up at Nick. Would you mind if I took a picture of the two of us? Now you're getting weird, Nick said, but smiled and leaned in. Dahl held the phone out and took the picture. Thanks, Dahl said again. No problem, Nick said. Now you better go before your friends are hauled away. Dahl hurried out. 2 minutes later, he was outside the Vine Club, watching Duval and Kerensky wrestling with Mark Corey by a black, sleek automobile, while Mitch and a valet looked on. The pretty posed people had their phones out, taking video of it all. Man, what the hell is this? Mitch asked as Dahl walked up. Your pals were in there not 10 minutes, and this chump tries to wreck the place getting at them. Sorry about that, Dahl said. And this clone action is just freaky, Mitch said. My friends were in there to get Mark, Dahl lied, and pointed at Kerensky. That's his public double. They use him for publicity sometimes. We heard he was getting a little rowdy and came to get him because he's got to be on set tomorrow. He wasn't rowdy until your friend showed up, Mitch said. And what does that dude need a double for? He's a supporting actor on a basic cable science fiction show. It's not like he's actually famous. You should see him at Comic-Con, Dahl said. Mitch snorted. He better enjoy that then because he's banned here, he said. When your friend is coherent, tell him that if he shows up again, he'll achieve warp speed thanks to my foot in his ass. I'll use those words exactly, Dahl said. Do that, Mitch said, and turned back to his duties. Dahl walked over to Duval. What's the problem? He asked. He's drunk and has no bones, Duval said, struggling with Corey. And he's woken up enough to argue with us. You can't handle a boneless drunk? Dahl asked. Of course I can, Duval said, but you said you didn't want us to get arrested. A little help here would be nice, Kerensky said, as Corey's drunken hand stabbed a finger up his nose. Dahl nodded, opened the door to the black car, and pulled the front seat forward. Duval and Kerensky got a better grip on Corey, steadied him, and then hurled him into the back seat. Corey jammed in, head into the far corner of the back seat, ass in the air. He whimpered for a second, and then made a flabby exhaling sound. He was out again. I'm not sitting with him, Kerensky said. No, you're not, Dahl agreed, reached into the car, and pulled Corey's wallet out of his pants. He held it out to Kerensky. You're driving. Why am I driving? Kerensky asked. Because then, if we get pulled over, you're him, Dahl said. Right, Kerensky said, taking the wallet. I'll pay the valet, Duval said. Tip well, Dahl said. A minute later, Kerensky figured out what D meant on the shift column, and the four of them were driving up Vine. Keep to the speed limit, Dahl said. I have no idea where I'm going, Kerensky said. You're an astrogator, Duval said. This is a road, Kerensky said. Hold on, Duval said, and pulled out her phone. This thing's got a map function. Let me get it working. Kerensky grunted and kept driving. Well, we had a fun evening, Duval said to Dahl as she entered the address of the Best Western into her phone. What did you do?
I saw an old friend, Dahl said, and showed Duval the picture of him and Nick.
Oh, Duval said, taking the phone. She reached into the back seat and grabbed his hand.
Oh, Andy. You okay?
I'm okay, he said. He looks just like him, Duval said, looking at the picture again.
He would, Dahl said, and looked out the window.
Chapter 18. He's slept long enough, Dahl said, nodding to Mark Corey's unconscious form on the bed. Wake him up.
That would mean touching him, Duval said.
Not necessarily, Hester said. He reached over and took one of the pillows Corey wasn't using and then hit him on the head with it. Corey woke up with a start.
Nicely done, Hansen said to Hester. He nodded in acknowledgement.
Corey sat up and looked around disoriented. Where am I? He asked to no one in particular.
In a hotel, Dahl said, the Best Western in Burbank.
Why am I here? Corey said. You passed out at the Vine Club after you attacked a friend of mine, Dahl said. We got you in your car and drove you here.
Corey looked down and furrowed his brow.
Where are my pants? He said.
We took them from you, Dahl said.
Why? Corey said.
Because we need to talk to you, Dahl said.
You could do that without taking my pants, Corey said.
In a perfect world, yes, Dahl said.
Corey peered at Dahl groggily.
I know you, he said after a minute.
You're an extra on my show.
He looked at Duval and Hansen.
So are you two.
His gaze turned to Hester.
You have never seen before.
Hester looked slightly exasperated at this.
We had a scene together, he said to Corey. You were attacked by swarm bots.
Dude, I have a lot of scenes with extras, Corey said. That's why they're called extras.
He turned his attention back to Dahl. And if any of you ever want to work on the show again, you will give me my pants and my car keys right now.
Your pants are in the restroom, Hansen said, drying.
You were so drunk you pissed yourself, Hester said.
Besides taking your pants for discussion purposes, we figured you might not want to go into work with clothes that smelled like urine, Dahl said.
Corey looked puzzled at this, glanced down at the underwear on his body, then bent over at the waist, sniffing. Both Duval and Hester gave up looks of mild disgust. Dahl watched impassively.
I smell fine, Corey said.
New underwear, Dahl said.
Whose, Corey said. Yours?
No, mine, Kerensky said. All this time he had been sitting silently in a sweet chair with its back to the bed. Now he stood and turned to face Corey. After all, you and I are the same size.
Corey gazed up at Kerensky dumbly.
You, he said finally.
Me, Kerensky agreed.
Who is also you?
It's you I saw in Gawker yesterday, Corey said.
I don't know what that means, Kerensky said.
There was a video of someone who looked like me standing in the street without pants, Corey said. Someone took the video on their phone and sent it to the Gawker website. Our show had to confirm I was on the set before anyone would believe it wasn't me. It was you.
Yes, it was probably me, Kerensky said.
Who are you? Corey asked.
I'm you, Kerensky said.
Or who you pretend to be, anyway.
That doesn't make any sense, Corey said.
Well, you talking about this Gawker thing doesn't make any sense to me either, so we're even, Kerensky said.
Why were you running around the street without pants? Corey asked.
Kerensky motioned to the others in the room.
They took my pants, he said.
Why? Corey asked.
Because we needed to talk to him, Dahl said.
Corey tore his eyes away from Kerensky.
What is wrong with you people? He asked.
You're still here, Dahl pointed out.
But Corey was ignoring him again. He got out of the bed and walked over to Kerensky, who stood there watching him. Corey looked him all over.
It's amazing, Corey said. You look exactly like me.
I am exactly like you, Kerensky said, down to the last detail.
That's not possible, Corey said, staring at the Kerensky's face.
It's possible, Kerensky said, and stepped closer to Corey. Take a closer look.
The two of them stood an inch apart while Corey examined Kerensky's body.
Okay, this is getting creepy, Hester said quietly to Dahl.
Mark, we need your help, Dahl said to Corey. We need you to get us in to talk to Charles Paulson.
Why? Corey said, not taking his eyes off Kerensky. There's something about the show we need to discuss with him, Dahl said.
He's not seeing people right now, Corey said, turning.
A month ago, his son was in a motorcycle accident. Son's in a coma right now, and they don't think he's going to pull through.
Paulson gave his son the bike for a birthday gift.
The rumor is Paulson goes to his office in the morning, sits down and stares at the walls until 6 o'clock, and then goes home again. He's not going to see you. He turned back to Kerensky.
We need to try, Dahl said.
And that's why we need you. He can avoid dealing with nearly everyone else, but you're a star on his show. He has to see you.
He doesn't have to see anybody, Corey said.
You could make him see you, Duvall said.
Corey glanced over and then broke away from Kerensky to step over to her.
And why would I do that? He asked.
You're right. If I threw a fit and demanded to see Paulson, he'd make time to see me. But if I saw him and wasted his time, he might kick me off the show. He might have my character killed off in some horrible way just to get a quick ratings boost out of it. And then I'd be out of a job. Do you know how hard it is to get a regular series gig in this town? I was a waiter before I got this. I'm not going to do anything for you people.
It's important, Dahl said.
I'm important, Corey said. My career is important. It's more important than whatever you want.
If you help us, we can give you money, Hansen said. We've got $90,000.
That's less than what I make an episode, Corey said, and looked back toward Kerensky. You'll have to do better than that.
Dahl opened his mouth to speak.
I'll handle this, Kerensky said, and looked at the others.
Let me talk to Mark.
So talk, Hester said.
Alone, Kerensky said.
Are you sure? Dahl said.
Yes, Kerensky said, I'm sure.
All right, Dahl said, and motioned to Duvall, Hansen, and an incredulous Hester to clear the room.
Tell me I'm not the only one who thinks something unseemly is about to happen in there, Hester said in the hall.
It's only you, Dahl said.
No, it's not, Duvall said.
Hansen also shook his head.
You can't tell me you weren't seeing how Corey was responding to Anatoly, Andy, Duvall said.
I must have missed it, Dahl said.
Right, Hester said. You really are a prude, aren't you? Duvall said to Dahl.
I just prefer to think there is a sober, reasoned discussion going on in there, and that Kerensky is making some very good points.
From the other side of the door, there was a muffled thump.
Yes, that's it, Hester said.
I think I'm going to wait in the lobby, Dahl said.
2 hours later, as dawn broke, a tired-looking Kerensky came down to the lobby.
Mark needs his keys, he said. He's got a 6:30 makeup call.
Dahl dug in his pocket for the keys.
So he'll help us? He asked.
Kerensky nodded.
He's going to put in a call as soon as he gets to the set, he said. He'll tell Paulson that unless he schedules a meeting today, he's going to quit.
And just how did you manage to get him to agree to that? Hester said.
Kerensky fixed Hester with a direct stare.
Are you actually interested?
Hester said. Actually, no.
No, I'm not.
Didn't think so, Kerensky said.
He took the keys from Dahl.
I am, Duvall said.
Kerensky sighed and turned to Duvall.
Tell me, Maya, have you ever met someone who you know so completely, so exactly, and so perfectly that it's like the two of you share the same body, thoughts, and desires? And had that feeling compounded by the knowledge that how you feel about them is exactly how they feel about you, right down to the very last atom of your being? Have you?
Not really, Duvall said.
I pity you, he said, and then headed back to the hotel room.
You had to ask, Hester said to Duvall.
I was curious, Duvall said. Sue me.
Now I have images, Hester said. They are in my mind. They will never leave me. I blame you.
It's certainly a side of Kerensky we haven't seen before, Dahl said. I never saw him being interested in men.
It's not that, Hansen said.
Did you miss the last couple of hours, Hester said, and the thumping?
No, Jimmy's right, Duvall said. He's not interested in men. He's interested in himself. Always has been. Now he's gotten the chance to follow through on that.
Ach!
Hester said.
Duvall looked over at him.
Wouldn't you, if you had the chance? She asked.
I didn't, Dahl pointed out.
Yes, but we already established you're a prude, Duvall said.
Dahl grinned.
Point, he said.
The elevator opened, and Corey came out, followed by Kerensky.
Corey walked up to Dahl.
I need your phone number, he said, so I can call you when I set up the meeting today.
All right, Dahl said, and gave it to him. Corey added it to his contacts and then looked at them all. I want you to appreciate what I'm doing for you, he said. By getting you this meeting, I'm putting my ass on the line. So if you do anything that puts me or my career at risk, I swear I will find you and make you miserable for the rest of your lives. Are you all clear on this? We're clear, Dahl said. Thank you. I'm not doing it for you, Corey said, and then nodded over to Kerensky. I'm doing it for him. Thank you anyway, Dahl said. Also, if anyone asks, the reason you guys were helping me into my car last night is because I had an allergic reaction to the tannins in the wine I was drinking at the Vine Club, Corey said. Of course, Dahl said. That's the truth, you know, Corey said. People are allergic to all sorts of things. Yes, Dahl said. You didn't see if anyone was taking video while you were putting me into the car, did you? Corey asked. There might have been a couple, Dahl allowed. Corey sighed. Tannins. Remember it. Will do, Dahl said. Corey nodded at Dahl and then walked over to Kerensky and enveloped him in a passionate hug. Kerensky reciprocated. I wish we had more time, Corey said. So do I, Kerensky said. They hugged again and separated. Corey walked out of the lobby. Kerensky watched him go. Wow, Hester said. You've got it bad, Kerensky. Kerensky wheeled around. What is that supposed to mean? Hester held up his hands. Look, I'm not judging, he said. Judging what? Kerensky said and looked at the others. What? You all think I had sex with Mark? Didn't you? Duval asked. We talked, Kerensky said. The most amazing conversation I have ever had with anyone in my entire life. It was like meeting the brother I never had. Come on, Anatoly, Hester said. We heard thumps. Mark was putting on his pants, Kerensky said. I gave him back his pants, and he was still unsteady, and he fell over. That was it. All right, Hester said. Sorry. Jesus, Kerensky said, looking around. You people. I have one of the most incredible experiences I'll ever have, talking with the one person who really gets me, who really understands me. And you're all down here thinking I'm performing some sort of time-traveling, incestuous masturbation thing? Thanks so much for crapping on my amazing, life-altering experience. You all make me sick. He stormed off. Well, that was interesting, Duval said. Kerensky stormed back in and pointed at Maya. And we're through, he said. Fair enough, Duval said. Kerensky stormed off a second time. I'd just like to point out that I was right, Dahl said after a minute. Duval walked over and smacked him on the head. Chapter 19. Charles Paulson's private offices were in Burbank, off the studio lot, in a building that housed three other production companies, two agencies, a tech startup, and a nonprofit dedicated to fighting thrush. Paulson's offices filled the third floor. The group took the elevator. I shouldn't have eaten that last burrito, Hester said as they entered the elevator, a pained look on his face. I told you not to, Hansen said. You also said that the 21st century had food safety laws, Hester said. I don't think food safety laws are going to protect you from a third carnitas burrito, Hansen said. That's not about food safety. It's about pork fat overload. I need a bathroom, Hester said. Can this wait? Dahl said to Hester. The elevator reached the third floor. This is kind of an important meeting. If I don't find a bathroom, you're not going to want me at the meeting, Hester said, because what would happen would be grim. The elevator doors opened, and the five of them stepped off. Down the hallway to the right was a sign for the men's bathroom. Hester made his way toward it, quickly but stiffly, and disappeared through its door. How long do you think this is going to take? Duval asked Dahl. Our meeting is in about a minute. Have you ever had a carnitas incident? Dahl asked Duval. No, Duval said, and from the looks of it, I should be glad. He'll probably be in there a while, Dahl said. We can't wait, Kerensky said. No, Dahl said. You guys go ahead, Hansen said. I'll stay and make sure Hester's all right. We'll wait for you in the office lobby when he's done. You sure? Dahl asked. I'm sure, Hansen said. Hester and I were just going to be spectators in the meeting anyway. We can wait in the lobby just as easily and read magazines. It's always fun to catch up on 350-year-old gossip. Dahl smiled at this. All right, he said. Thanks, Jimmy. If Hester's intestines explode, you let us know, Duval said. You'll be the first, Hansen said, and headed toward the bathroom. The receptionist at Paulson Productions smiled warmly at Kerensky as he, Dahl, and Duvall entered the office lobby. Hello, Mark, she said. Good to see you again. Kerensky said. We're here to see Mr. Paulson, Dahl said, stepping into Kerensky's moment of awkwardness. We have an appointment. Mark set it up. Yes, of course, the receptionist said, glancing at her computer screen. Mr. Dahl, is it? That's me, Dahl said. Have a seat over there, and I'll let him know you're here, she said, smiling at Kerensky again before picking up her handset to call Paulson. I think she's flirting with you, Duvall said to Kerensky. She thought she was flirting with Mark, Kerensky pointed out. Maybe there's a history there, Duvall said. Stop it, Kerensky said. Just trying to help you rebound after the breakup, Duvall said. Mr. Dahl, Mark, ma'am, the receptionist said. Mr. Paulson will see you now. Follow me, please. She led them down the corridor to a large office, in which sat Paulson behind a large desk. Paulson looked at Kerensky severely. I'm supposed to be talking to these people of yours, not you, he said. You're supposed to be at work. I am at work, Kerensky said. This is not work, Paulson said. Your work is at the studio, on the set. If you're not there, we're not shooting. If we're not shooting, you're wasting production time and money. The studio and the Corwin are already riding me because we're behind on production this year. You're not helping. Mr. Paulson, Dahl said, perhaps you should call your show and see if Mark Corey is there. Paulson fixed on Dahl, seeing him for the first time. You look vaguely familiar. Who are you? I'm Andrew Dahl, he said, sitting on one of the chairs in front of the desk, and then motioned to Duvall, who sat on the other. This is Maya Duvall. We work on Intrepid. Then you should be on set as well, Paulson said. Mr. Paulson, Dahl repeated, you should really call your show and see if Mark Corey is there. Paulson pointed at Kerensky. He's right there, he said. No, he's not, Dahl said. That's why we're here to talk to you. Paulson's eyes narrowed. You people are wasting my time, he said. Jesus, Kerensky said, exasperated. Will you just call the damn set? Mark's there. Paulson paused to stare at Kerensky for a moment and then picked up his desk phone and punched a button. Yeah, hi, Judy, he said. You on the set? Yeah, okay. Tell me if you see Mark Corey there. He paused and then looked at Kerensky again. Okay. How long has he been there? Okay. He been acting weird today, out of character? Yeah. Okay. No, I don't need to speak to him. Thanks, Judy. He hung up. That was my showrunner, Judy Melendez, Paulson said. She says Mark's been on set since the 6:30 makeup call. Thank you, Kerensky said. All right, I'll bite, Paulson said to Kerensky. Who the hell are you? Mark obviously knows you, or he wouldn't have set up this meeting. You could be his identical twin, but I know he doesn't have any brothers. So, what, be his cousin? Do you want to be on the show? Is this what this is about? Do you put family members on the show? Dahl asked. We don't go out of our way to advertise it, but sure, Paulson said. A season ago, I gave my uncle a part. He was about to lose his SAG insurance, so I put him in for the part of an admiral who tried to have Abernathy court-martialed. I also put in a small role for my son. He stopped speaking abruptly. We heard about your son, Dahl said. We're very sorry. Thank you, Paulson said, and paused again. His demeanor had transformed from aggressive producer to something more tired and small. Sorry, he said after a moment. It's been difficult. I can't imagine, Dahl said. Be glad that you can't, Paulson said, and reached over on his desk for a picture frame, looked at it, and held it in his hand. Stupid kid. I told him to be careful handling the bike in the rain. He turned the frame briefly, showing a picture of him and a younger man, dressed in motorcycle leathers, smiling at the camera. He never did listen to me, he said. Is that your son? Duvall asked, reaching out for the frame. Yes, Paulson said, handing over the picture. Matthew. He had just gotten his master's in anthropology when he tells me he wants to try being an actor. I said to him, if you wanted to be an actor, why did I just pay for you to get a master's in anthropology? But I put him on the show. He was an extra on a couple of episodes before. Well, Andy, Duvall said, handing the picture to Dahl. He stared at it. Kerensky came over and looked at the picture Dahl was holding. You have got to be kidding me, he said. What? Paulson said, looking at the three of them. Do you know him? Do you know Matthew? All three of them looked at Paulson. Matthew! Screamed a woman's voice from out of the room and down the hall. Oh, shit, Duval said, and launched herself out of her chair and out of the room. Dahl and Kerensky followed. In the lobby, the receptionist had attached herself to Hester, sobbing in joy. Hester stood there, wearing a receptionist, deeply confused. Hansen saw his three crewmates and came over to them. "We walked into the lobby," he said. "That's all we did. We walked into the lobby, and she screams a name, and then almost leaps over her desk to get at Hester. What's going on?" "I think we found the actor who plays Hester," Dahl said. "Okay," Hansen said. "Who is he?"
"Matthew?"
Paulson said from the hall. He had followed his three guests out of the room to find out what was going on.
"Matthew?
Matthew!" He rushed to Hester, hugged him furiously, and started kissing him on the cheek. "He's Charles Paulson's kid," Duval said to Hansen. "The one who's in a coma?" Hansen said. "That's the one," Dahl said.
"Oh, wow," Hansen said.
"Wow." All three of them looked at Hester, who whispered, "Help me." "Someone's going to have to tell them who Hester really is," Kerensky said. He, Hansen, and Duval all looked at Dahl. Dahl sighed and moved toward Hester. "Are you all right?" Dahl asked Hester. They were in a private hospital room in which Matthew Paulson lay on a bed, tubes keeping him alive. Hester was staring at his comatose double. "I'm better off than he is," Hester said. "Hester," Dahl said, and looked out the doorway where he was standing to see if Charles Paulson was close enough in the hall to have heard Hester's comment. He wasn't. He was in the waiting area with Duval, Hansen, and Kerensky. Matthew Paulson could only have two visitors at a time. "Sorry," Hester said. "I didn't mean it to be an asshole. It's just..." "Well, now it all makes sense, doesn't it?"
"What do you mean?" Dahl asked.
"About me," Hester said. "You and Duval and Hansen and Finn are all interesting because you had to have interesting backstories so you could all get killed off in a contextual way. Finn getting killed by someone he knew, right? You about to be killed when you go back to 4chan, but I didn't have anything unusual about me. I'm just some guy from Des Moines who had a B-minus average in high school who joined the W fleet to see some of the universe before he came back home and stayed. Before I came on the Intrepid, I was just another sarcastic loner. And now that makes sense, because I was never meant to do anything special, was I? I really was an extra. A placeholder character who Paulson could pour his kid into until his kid got bored with playing actor and went back to school to get a doctorate. Even the one thing I can do, pilot a shuttle, is just something that got stuck in because the show needed someone in that seat, and why not give it to the producer's kid? Make him feel special." "I don't think it's like that," Dahl said. "It's exactly like that," Hester said. "I'm meant to fill a spot, and that's it."
"That's not true at all," Dahl said.
"No?" Hester looked up at Dahl. "What's my first name?"
"What?"
Dahl asked. "What's my first name?" Hester repeated. "You're Andy Dahl. Maya Duval, Jimmy Hansen, Anatoly Kerensky, for Christ's sake. What's my first name, Andy? You don't know, do you?" "You have a first name," Dahl said. "I could look on my phone and find it." "But you don't know it," Hester said. "You never used it. You never call me by it. We're friends, and you don't even know my full name."
"I'm sorry," Dahl said. "I just never thought about calling you anything other than Hester."
"My point exactly," Hester said. "If even my friends never think about what my first name might be, that points out my role in the universe pretty precisely, doesn't it?"
He went back to looking at Matthew Paulson in his coma.
"So what is your first name?" Dahl finally asked.
"It's Jasper," Hester said.
"Jasper," Dahl said. "Family name," Hester said. "Jasper Allen Hester."
"Do you want me to call you Jasper from now on?" Dahl asked.
"Fuck no," Hester said. "Who wants to be called Jasper? It's a ridiculous fucking name."
Dahl tried to stifle a laugh and failed. Hester smiled at this.
"I'll keep calling you Hester," Dahl said. "But I want you to know that inside, I'll be saying Jasper."
"If it makes you happy," Hester said.
"Jasper, Jasper, Jasper," Dahl said. "All right," Hester said. "Enough. I'd hate to kill you in a hospital."
They returned their attention to Matthew Paulson.
"Poor kid," Hester said.
"He's your age," Duval said.
"Yeah, but I'm likely to outlive him," Hester said. "There's a change for one of us."
I suppose it is, Dahl said. That's the problem with living in the 21st century, Hester said. In our world, if he got in the same accident, we could fix him. I mean, hell, Andy, think of all the horrible things that happened to you and you survived. I survived because it wasn't time for me to die yet, Dahl said. It's like Kerensky and his amazing powers of recovery. It's all thanks to the narrative. Does it matter why? Hester said. I mean, really, Andy, if you're just about dead and you survive and are healed by entirely fictional means, do you really give a shit? No, because you're not dead. The narrative knocks us off when it's convenient, but it's not all bad. You were just talking about how it all made sense you were a nobody, Dahl said. That didn't sound like you were in love with the narrative. I didn't say I was, Hester said, but I think you're forgetting that this meant I was the only one of us not absolutely fated to die horribly for the amusement of others. This is a good point, Dahl said. This show we're on, it's crap, Hester said. But it's crap that sometimes works to our advantage. Until it finally kills us, Dahl said. Kills you, Hester reminded him. I might survive, remember? He motioned to Matthew Paulson. And if he lived in our world, he might have been saved too. Dahl was silent at this. Hester looked up at him eventually to see Dahl looking at him curiously. What? I'm thinking, Dahl said. About what? Hester said. About using the narrative to our advantage, Dahl said. Hester squinted. This involves me in some way, doesn't it? He said. Yes, Jasper, Dahl said. Yes, it does. Chapter 20. Charles Paulson opened the door to the conference room, where the five of them sat, waiting, followed by another man. Sorry about the wait, he told them, and then motioned to the other man. You wanted to see the show's head writer. Here he is. This is Nick Weinstein. I've explained to him what's going on. Hello, Weinstein said, looking at the five of them. Wow, Charles really wasn't kidding. Now that's funny, Hester said, breaking up the slack-jawed staring four of the five of them were doing. What's funny? Weinstein asked. Mr. Weinstein, were you ever an extra on your show? Dahl asked. Once, a few seasons ago, Weinstein said. We needed a warm body for a funeral scene. I happened to be on the set. They threw a costume on me and told me to act sad. Why? We know the man you played, Dahl said. His name is Jenkins. Really? Weinstein said and smiled. What's he like? He's a sad, crazed shut-in who never got over the loss of his wife, Duvall said. Oh, Weinstein said and stopped smiling. Sorry. You're better groomed, though, Hansen said encouragingly. That's probably the first time anyone's ever said that about me, Weinstein said, motioning at his beard. You said you had something you wanted to talk to me and Nick about, Paulson said to Dahl. I do, Dahl said. We do. Please sit. Who is Jenkins? Kerensky whispered to Dahl as Paulson and Weinstein took their chairs. Later, Dahl said. So, Paulson said. His eyes flickered involuntarily over to Hester every few seconds. Mr. Paulson, Mr. Weinstein, there's a reason we came back to your time, Dahl said. We came to convince you to stop your show. What? Weinstein said. Why? Because otherwise, we're dead, Dahl said. Mr. Weinstein, when you kill off an extra in one of your scripts, the actor playing the extra eventually walks off the set and goes to get lunch. But where we are, that person stays dead, and people are killed off in just about every episode. Well, not in every episode, Weinstein said. Jimmy, Dahl said. Chronicles of the Intrepid has aired 128 episodes over 6 seasons to date, Hansen said. One or more Intrepid crew members have died in 96 of those episodes. 112 episodes have death portrayed in one way or another. You've killed at least 400 Intrepid crew members overall in the course of the series. And when you add in episodes where you've had other ships destroyed or planets attacked or suffering from diseases, your total death count reaches into the millions. Not counting enemy deaths, Dahl said. No, those would bump up the figure incrementally, Hansen said. He's read up a lot on the show, Dahl said to Weinstein about Hansen. All of those deaths aren't my fault, Weinstein said. You wrote them, Duvall said. I didn't write all of them, Weinstein said. There are other writers on staff.
You're the head writer, Hester said. Everything in the scripts goes through you for approval. The point is not to pin these deaths on you, Dahl said, cutting in. You couldn't have known. From your point of view, you're writing fiction. From our point of view, though, it's real.
How does that even work? Weinstein said. How does what we write here affect your reality? That doesn't make any sense.
Hester snorted. Welcome to our lives, he said.
What do you mean? Weinstein said, turning his attention to Hester.
Do you think our lives make any sense at all? Hester said. You've got us living in a universe where there are killer robots with harpoons walking around a space station. Because sure, it makes perfect sense to have harpoon-launching killer robots.
Or ice sharks, Duval said. Or Borgovian landworms, Hansen said.
Weinstein held up a finger. I was not responsible for those landworms, he said. I was out for 2 weeks with bird flu. The writer who did that script loved Dune. By the time I got back, it was too late. The Herbert estate flayed us for those.
We dove into a black hole to get here, Hester said, and jerked a thumb at Kerensky. And we made sure to kidnap this sad bastard to make sure it would work, because he's a main character on your show and won't die off-screen. Think about that. Physics alters around him.
Not that it keeps me from having the crap beaten out of me on a regular basis, Kerensky said. I used to wonder why bad things kept happening to me. Now I know it's because at least one of your main characters has to be made to suffer. That just sucks.
You even make him heal super quickly, so you can beat him up again, Duval said, which, now that I think about it, seems cruel.
And there's the box, Hansen said, motioning to Dahl.
The box?
Weinstein said, looking at Dahl.
Whenever you write bad science into the show, the way it gets resolved is that we feed the problem into the box, and then, when it's dramatically appropriate, it spits out an answer, Dahl said.
We never wrote a box into the series, Weinstein said, confused. But you do write bad science into the series, Dahl said, all the time. So there's a box.
Did they teach you science in school? Hester asked.
I'm just wondering.
I went to Occidental College, Weinstein said. It has really good science classes.
Yeah, but did you go to any? Duval said.
Because I have to tell you, our universe is a mess.
Other science fiction shows had science advisors and consultants, Hansen pointed out.
It's science fiction, Weinstein said. The second part of that phrase matters, too.
But you're making it bad science fiction, Hester said, and we have to live in it.
Guys, Dahl said, interrupting everyone again, let's try to stay on target here.
What is the target? Paulson asked. You said you had an idea you wanted to talk about, and all I'm hearing so far is a bitch session at my head writer.
I'm feeling a little defensive, Weinstein said.
Don't, Dahl said.
Again, you couldn't have known.
But now you know where we are coming from and why we came back to stop your show.
Paulson opened his mouth at this, probably to object and offer any number of reasons why that would be impossible.
Dahl held up his hand to forestall the objection.
Now that we're here, I know that just stopping the show can't happen. It was a long shot anyway. But now, I don't want the show to end, because I can see a way for it to work to our advantage. Both ours and yours.
Get to it then, Paulson said.
Charles, your son's in a coma, Dahl said.
Yes, Paulson said.
There's no chance for him ever coming out of it, Dahl said.
No, Paulson said after a minute and looked around, eyes wet.
No.
You didn't say anything about this, Weinstein said.
I thought there was still a chance.
No, Paulson said. Dr. Lowe told me yesterday that the scans show his brain function continuing to deteriorate and that it's the machines keeping his body alive at this point. We're waiting until we have the family together so we can say goodbye. We'll have him taken off the machines then. He looked over at Hester, who sat there silently, and then back at Dahl. Unless you have another idea.
I do, Dahl said.
Charles, I think we can save your son.
Tell me how, Paulson said.
We take him with us, Dahl said, back to the Intrepid.
We can cure him there. We have the technology there to do it. And even if we didn't, he pointed at Weinstein, we have the narrative.
Mr. Weinstein here writes an episode in which Hester is injured but survives and is taken to sickbay to be healed. It gets done. Hester survives. Your son survives.
Take him into the show, Paulson said.
That's your plan.
That's the idea, Dahl said. Sort of.
Sort of,
Paulson said, frowning. There are some logistical issues, Dahl said, as well as some that are, for lack of a better word, teleological.
Like what? Paulson said.
Dahl turned to Weinstein, who was also frowning. I'm guessing you're thinking of a few right now, he said.
Yeah, Weinstein said and motioned to Hester. The first is that you'll have two of him in your universe.
You can make him an excuse for that, Paulson said.
I could, yes, Weinstein said. It would be messy and nonsensical.
This is a problem for you? Hester asked.
But the thing is that two of him in their universe means none of him in one,
Weinstein said, ignoring Hester's comment. Your son playing this character here. If they both go, there's no one to play the character.
We'll recast the role, Paulson said, someone who looks like Matthew.
But then the problem is which of the... Weinstein looked at Hester.
Hester, he said.
Which of the Hesters the new one back here affects, Weinstein said.
Besides that, and I'm the first to admit that I have no idea how this screwy voodoo works, but if I were trying to do this, I wouldn't be using a substitute Hester, because who knows how that would affect your son's healing process. He might not end up himself.
Right, Dahl said, which is why we offer the following solution.
I stay behind, Hester said.
So, you stay behind, pretend to be my son, Paulson said.
You make a miraculous recovery, then we make the episode where you play my son and we make you well.
Sort of, Hester said.
What is it with these sort ofs? Paulson snapped. What's the problem?
Dahl looked over at Weinstein again. Tell him, he said.
Oh, shit, Weinstein said, straightening up in his chair. This is about the Adam thing, isn't it?
Adam thing? Paulson said.
What Adam thing?
Weinstein grabbed his head.
So stupid, he said to himself.
Charles, when we wrote the episode where Abernathy and the others came back in time, we did this thing where they could only be here 6 days before their atoms reverted to their current positions in the timeline.
I have no idea what that means, Nick, Paulson said. Talk normal human to me.
It means that if we stay in this timeline for 6 days, we die, Dahl said. And we're already on day 3. It also means that if Matthew goes to their timeline, he only has 6 days before the same thing happens to him, Weinstein said.
What a stupid fucking idea! Paulson exploded at Weinstein. Why the fuck did you do that?
Weinstein held his hands out defensively.
How was I supposed to know one day I'd be here talking about this? He said plaintively. Jesus, Charles, we were just trying to get through the damn episode. We needed them to have a reason to get everything done on schedule. It made sense at the time.
Well, change it, Paulson said.
New rule. People traveling through time can take as much fucking time as they want.
Weinstein looked over at Dahl pleadingly.
It's too late for that, Dahl said, interpreting Weinstein's look. The rule was in effect when we came through time. And besides, this isn't an episode. We're acting outside the narrative, which means that even if you could change it, it wouldn't have an effect because it's not being recorded. We're stuck with it.
They're right, Paulson said to Weinstein, motioning at the intrepid crew.
The universe you've written sucks.
Weinstein looked cowed.
He didn't know, Dahl said to Paulson. You can't blame him. And we need him, so please, don't fire him.
I'm not going to fire him, Paulson said, still staring at Weinstein. I want to know how we fix this.
Weinstein opened his mouth, then closed it, then turned to Dahl.
Help would be appreciated, he said.
This is where it gets a little crazy, Dahl said.
Gets? Weinstein said.
Dahl turned to Paulson.
Hester stays behind, he said. We take your son with us. We go back to our time and our universe, but he, Dahl pointed at Weinstein, writes that the person in the shuttle is Hester. We don't try to sneak him in or have him be another extra. He has to be central to the plot. We call him out by name. His full name, Jasper Allen Hester.
Jasper? Duval said to Hester.
Not now, Hester said.
So we call him Jasper Allen Hester, Paulson said.
So what? He'll still be my son, not your friend.
No, Dahl said. Not if we say he isn't. If the narrative says it's Hester, then it's Hester.
But Paulson cut himself short and looked at Weinstein.
This makes no fucking sense to me at all, Nick.
No, it doesn't, Weinstein said.
But that's the thing. It doesn't have to make sense. It just has to happen.
He turned to Dahl. You're using the shoddy world-building of the series to your advantage.
I wouldn't have put it that way, but yes, Dahl said.
What about this Adam thing, Paulson said. I thought this was a problem.
If it was Hester here and your son there, then it would be, Weinstein said. But if it's definitely Hester there, then it will definitely be your son here, and all their atoms will be where they should be. He turned to Dahl. Right?
That's the idea, Dahl said.
I like this plan, Weinstein said.
And we're sure this will work? Paulson said.
No, we're not, Hester said. Everyone looked at him.
What? He said. We don't know if it will work. We could be wrong about this, in which case, Mr. Paulson, your son will still die.
But then you will die too, Paulson said. You don't have to die.
Mr. Paulson, the fact of the matter is that if your son hadn't gone into his coma, you would have eventually killed me off as soon as he got bored being an actor, Hester said, and then pointed at Weinstein.
Well, he would kill me off, probably by being eaten by a space badger or something else completely asinine.
Your son is in a coma now, so it's possible I'll live. But then again, one day I might be on deck 6 when the Intrepid gets into a space battle, in which case I'll be just some anonymous bastard sucked into space. Either way, I would have died pointlessly. He looked around the table.
I figured this way, if I die, I die trying to do something useful, saving your son, he said, looking back at Paulson.
My life will actually be good for something, which it's avoiding being so far. And if this works, then both your son and I get to live, which wasn't going to happen before. Either way, I figure I'm better off than I was before.
Paulson got up, crossed the room to where Hester was sitting, and collapsed into him, sobbing. Hester, not quite knowing what to do with him, patted him on the back gingerly.
I don't know how I can make this up to you, Paulson said to Hester when he finally disengaged. He looked over to the rest of the crew. How I'm going to make it up to all of you.
As it happens, Dahl said, I have some suggestions on that.
Chapter 21. The taxi turned off North Occidental Boulevard onto Easterly Terrace and slowed to a stop in front of a yellow bungalow.
Your stop, the taxi driver said.
Would you mind waiting? Dahl asked. I'm only going to be a few minutes.
I have to run the meter, the driver said.
That's fine, Dahl said.
He got out of the car and walked up the brick walkway to the house door and knocked. After a moment, a woman came to the door.
I don't need any more copies of the Watchtower, she said.
Pardon?
Dahl said.
Or the Book of Mormon, she said.
I mean, thank you, I appreciate the thought, but I'm good.
I do have something to deliver, but it's neither of those things, Dahl said.
But first, tell me if you're Samantha Martinez.
Yes, she said.
My name is Andy Dahl, Dahl said. You could say that you and I almost have a friend in common.
He held out a small box to her. She didn't take it.
What is it? She said.
Open it, Dahl suggested.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dahl, but I am a little suspicious of strange men coming to my door on a Saturday morning, asking my name and bearing mysterious packages, Martinez said.
Dahl smiled at this.
Fair enough, he said.
He opened the package, revealing a small, black hemisphere that Dahl recognized as a holographic image projector.
He activated it.
The image of someone who looked like Samantha Martinez appeared and hovered in the air over the projector. She was in a wedding dress, smiling, standing next to a man who looked like a clean-shaven version of Jenkins. Dahl held it out for her to see. Martinez looked at the image quietly for a minute.
I don't understand, she said.
It's complicated, Dahl admitted.
Did you Photoshop my face into this picture, she asked.
And how are you doing this? She motioned to the floating projection. Is this some new Apple thing?
If you're asking if I've altered the image, the answer is no, Dahl said. And as for the projector, it's probably best to say it's something like a prototype.
He touched the surface of the projector and the image shifted to another picture of Jenkins and Martinez's double looking happily at each other. After a few seconds, the picture changed to another.
I don't understand, Martinez said again.
You're an actress, Dahl said. Was an actress, Martinez said. I did it for a couple of years and didn't get anywhere. I'm a teacher now.
When you were an actress, you had a small role on Chronicles of the Intrepid, Dahl said. Do you remember?
Yes, Martinez said.
My character got shot. I was in the episode for about a minute.
This is that character, Dahl said. Her name was Margaret. The man in the picture is her husband.
He held the projector out to Martinez. She took it, looked at it again,